Swedish-British journalist, filmmaker, political writer, and author of five books, Pelle Neroth-Taylor, on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome to the Pelle Neroth-Taylor Show on this Thursday. We've got four excellent guests with you today, as usual. It's World Tuna Day and World Password Day, whatever that means. All I know about passwords is a surprisingly large number of very intelligent people have the password numbers 1, 2, 3, 4 and recommended to change those all the time, and they never do so. Anyway, we've got Thomas Corbett Dillon, who's a political strategist and commentator, former advisor to Boris Johnson. As a Brit, he's going to bring his own perspectives to US politics, which we'll be talking about. The imminent apparent ban on TikTok is a top of the agenda for a lot of the digital generation, and he was a digital whiz kid for Boris Johnson, so he has some expertise on that. Next, we've got George Webb, who's a top investigative journalist based in Washington, D.C. He's written a number of books on the national security issues and the intersection of Washington, D.C. and Hollywood. Politics is Hollywood for ugly people, as they say. He's going to talk to us about the Octopus Murders, which is currently a documentary series running on Netflix. And Daniel Casalero, who's a freelance journalist, who said, "I'm not going to commit suicide," and then apparently suicided himself shortly after. Can we trace his investigations all the way to Epstein and the Israeli sex blackmail rings? We'll see. After the hour, we've got John Hulsman, who's the author of The Last Best Hope, History of American Geopolitical Realism. Is Israel willing to use nuclear weapons against Iran still? We'll be talking a little bit about that. He reckons we're not out of the woods yet, and we're still on nuclear World War III watch. And we'll also talk about Macron's restated promise in The Economist yesterday or today that he will send troops into Ukraine if Ukraine asks for it. Finally, we've got Piers Robinson, who's another friend and returning guest, who's going to an absolute expert on propaganda. He's a co-director of the Organization of Propaganda Studies. And we'll talk a little bit about the big hoax of the chemical attacks of 2017 and 18, I think, in Syria, which were carried out by the Western intelligence agencies. And it's a big flurry about that. It's history, but we have to know history so that we can prevent these sorts of hoaxes happening again and being caught out by them. Well armed as well.
TNT's State of the Nation.
How are Mr. and Mrs. Kelly right now?
Well, they're overjoyed. I will tell you, you know, they're exhausted. They're just, can you just imagine, right? They're exhausted. Let me start out by first of all, you know, thanking TNT, because you provided a critical platform for us to be able to get Mr. Kelly's story out there. And with your vast, viewer and listenership, it really helped. So I think you all need to pat yourselves on the back, just part of the team of truth, as I say it, the truth tellers, that managed to put significant pressure on the county prosecutor, George Silva and Kimberly Hunley and Michael Jetty, to, you know, close up this case.
State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff. Like making sure your kids are in the right seats for their age and size. Get it right at nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Being a parent, especially for the first time, with that comes a lot of self-doubt. As a dad, I just try to lead by example. When you're trying to be the best person that you can be, your kids see that and then they emulate that.
unbiased information.
Honest and forthright.
News without the misinformation.
It doesn't matter what side you're from. What matters is what you say, the truthfulness behind it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelinero's Taylor Show. We've got Basil, our political editor, with us today with today's news analysis. How's it going, Basil?
Very well, thanks, Pelly. Great to be with you, and hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world. Well, there's no doubt where the flashpoint is this afternoon, or rather early morning in California, because hundreds of helmeted police, you know, the real RoboCop types, have forced their way into the central plaza of the University of California, Los Angeles, at break of dawn this morning, it appears, because it was still dark, to dismantle the anti-genocide protest camp, which had been attacked the night before by Zionist supporters. Yes, indeed, a pre-dawn raid shows about six protesters under arrest, the live footage, kneeling on the ground, their hands bound behind their backs with zip ties, in another eerie irony of the fate of so many Palestinians. Hopefully the American protesters won't be shot in their head and dumped in a mass grave, but they are certainly rubbing up against the full force of what people are calling American fascism, cheered on, of course, by so many on Capitol Hill and called for by Netanyahu, who, like so many others, has deliberately mischaracterized these protests as anti-Semitic, even though, of course, there are many, many Jews taking part in them. Meanwhile, UCLA officials have said that the school is going to remain shuttered for the foreseeable future, and other protests continue around the country. But there was a big encampment at UCLA last night and the night before. They were violently attacked by a Zionist mob of people firing fireworks into the encampment and beating people up, and now they've got the police to do it for them.
Wow. Again, as I said yesterday, it's shades of 1968, I think. What's the Western media reporting on this?
Well, from what I can see so far, sort of relatively neutral, but Reuters, for example, still framing the protesters, or rather there being an interpretation of the protesters, as being anti-Semitic. And, you know, intellectually challenged people like Senator Tom Cotton described the protests as little Gazas, virtually calling for the extermination of the protesters, much as the way the Palestinian people are being exterminated. Escalating protests are forcing US President Joe Biden to walk a careful line of denouncing anti-Semitism while supporting young Americans' right to protest and trying to limit longer-term political damage. Well, he's not going to be able to do that because some people call this the woke mob, but whatever you want to call them, it certainly looks like the majority of young people in America, those sort of better educated who can afford to go to college, are very much in the anti-genocide camp. But what the media are not doing is you very rarely see any of the protesters given a microphone by anyone in the legacy media and asked why they're demonstrating. You know, please go into detail. All the oxygen in the room is taken up by the supposedly hurt feelings of some Zionist Jewish students who object to the protest camps, as I said, often violently, and the deliberate mischaracterization by talking heads in the media and the bought paid for politicians on Capitol Hill.
Well, it's interesting because I try to get the European angle on these things, and Josep Borrell, the foreign minister of Europe, if you like, who, God, let's pray that he leaves after the European elections in June. But he was kind of following, listening to his master's voice and criticizing the what's happening in Georgia, the country Georgia, where there are protests. I don't know if it's sort of incipient color revolution going on, managed by the West against a government that is trying to balance between Russia and the West, and has had this Foreign Aliens Registration Act, which prohibits or requires the accounting of, if you have an NGO that gets more of its funding, more than 20% of its funding from abroad, then you have to register that. And that's identical to the US Act of the same name. And it's all to stop, you know, color, because NGOs are used for color revolutions. You know, they call themselves free speech organizations, and they go in there and they support students, and they have paid nice young women, usually with perfect English, saying we're fighting against evil Kremlin run government and so on. And but I mean, he was criticizing this and talking about the brutal quashing of these protests by a government which I think is doing exactly the right thing. I mean, it's much wiser than the protesters. When in fact, and then he doesn't say a word about what's going on in America. I mean, just as Western leaders, who completely, of course, they're in the pockets of the United States, they don't say anything about the Gilets Jaunes protests when they were very loud about right. the Belarusian protests two or three years ago. So it's obviously it's double standards, which the rest of the world can easily see, you know.
Yes, exactly. I mean, if this sort of violent crackdown was against students in Iran,
exactly,
it would be all over the media, it would be, you know, denounced. But instead, politicians are calling for the crackdowns, you know, it make them violent. And it's a reflection, really, of the violence of Zionism as well. It's being brought right onto American campuses. It's extraordinary how there are parallels between the violence that Palestinians face on a day-to-day basis and now the violence, you know, being inflicted upon people who object to other violence. Now, protests over the war and Biden's strong support for them, for Israel, of course, has dogged him over the last 6 months. He can't go anywhere without people shouting him down. Yesterday, 57 congressional Democrats asked Biden to withhold aid to Israel in an attempt to stop the planned assault in Rafah. And the Israeli war cabinet is due to meet tonight to discuss the latest ceasefire hostage proposals. Biden aides apparently are dismissing the idea that the protests or the supporters could cost the Biden the White House at the presidential election. And they point to the relatively small number of participants compared to some 41 million eligible Gen Z voters. Well, I think that's being very naive, Pelle, just because if you add up everybody at all the protest camps at universities around the country, it probably amounts to in the tens of thousands, I would say. You know, maybe 50, maybe 100,000 souls. Nevertheless, you know, there are other people, because they're at work or whatever, who simply aren't able, or perhaps don't quite feel that strongly, so strongly as to go and join the protest camps, but nevertheless are extremely sympathetic to them. So I think if the White House thinks that this is somehow a lunatic fringe, they've got another thing coming, particularly with the way that members of faculty have also been assaulted and arrested. So, I, you know, the sort of, what for want of a better word, enlightened liberal intelligentsia of the United States are the ones under assault, not just a handful of students.
I'm going to mainstream the Israeli topic with several of my guests today. I'm going to ask them what they think, because Halsman, who's an expert realist, he thinks that the Israelis may yet escalate and may yet attack and create a regional war, because in his view, Netanyahu's in real trouble, because if he doesn't go for a ceasefire, the ICC might get him, basically, and the Americans are then going to be faced with what to do. But if he does go for a ceasefire, then he's also in trouble. What are your thoughts if he's going to be hoisted on those on a petard either way, unless he goes for a third option, which is to escalate?
Well, I'm sorry to say that there's every likelihood of escalation with respect to Rafah. He's made statements this week saying that irrespective of any ceasefire or hostage deal, there will be a full-scale onslaught on the last so-called safe haven, which is still subject to nightly bombing raids, by the way. It's just simply that they haven't gone in on the ground with tanks yet. Go on.
The trouble he's in. A deal with Hamas would mean Israel's defeat in the war with Hamas and the cancellation of operation in Rafah, and an uprising of the right-wing camp against Netanyahu, exit of right-wing politicians and ministers. It's from government, a collapse of the Netanyahu government, and new elections, which of course might end up with Netanyahu losing and ending up in jail. And then he might, if he doesn't make a deal, Washington will move forward with the sanctioning of the IDF. Apparently there is the promise of a sanction of an extremist IDF unit, and the ICC will go ahead with its arrest warrants. The military operation will begin in Rafah, and Israel will face internal uprisings from the left flank. So Netanyahu is on the track from both the left and the right in his country. And there is that sort of tension, as we can see, if you just look at Haaretz or something. I mean, he's under constant attack from the Israeli liberal left, even though they really hate Hamas. They really hate Netanyahu as well.
I think that's sort of largely that they'd simply rather have their guy in place, and it's a personal thing against Netanyahu.
It won't change the policies that much.
No, you can't get a cigarette paper between anybody, really, so-called what passes these days for mainstream Israeli opinion. I'd also be amazed if he ever sees the inside of a jail cell in Israel as a result of the corruption charges. He'll get out of that. But nevertheless, there's no doubt that he'd like to hang on to power for as long as possible. The current, sort of stalemate, the nightmare limbo that Gazans are in with this endless prospect of a full-scale ground invasion of Rafah suits him very well. And he's quite happy for this stage to carry on. Right at the beginning of the whole thing, he said this will be a long war. And that's because the longer he can drag it out, the longer his political career continues, really. As regards the widening war with Lebanon and Iran, well, I think that's the one thing that the Americans don't want to see. He may yet do it. Of course he might. I mean, if he would launch a war with Iran just simply to avoid corruption charges, then, we really are in a very dark place indeed. Not that we're not.
I think, we will carry on our news analysis in the next hour. And these are very weighty moments. And I think tomorrow we'll have a much clearer idea after this war cabinet meeting in Israel tonight. And obviously... There'll be a cascade of events following from that. But sorry, we're going to go into our first guest now. This is the Pelinir Roth Taylor Show on TNT News Talk. Thank you very much. On to the first guest after the break.
Los Angeles has been described as a suburb looking for a city. Join me as we explore LA's neighbourhoods and the local restaurants, cafes and bars that are an integral part of these vibrant and diverse communities.
Today we are going to cook a small steak for people who are really quite hungry.
Very, very simple. A couple squeezes of lemon in there.
Since you're adding the meat, and you can also do it with tofu options as well for the vegetarians.
Olive oil. So now we're going to season it up. Fresh grind black pepper.
Really hot and busy in here.
I'm going to go ahead and make some butter toast.
Olive oil.
Smells good.
Grab our shiitake mushrooms.
Season with salt a little bit.
Boy, it's getting hot in the kitchen. Need another drink of my beer. That's the best part of cooking.
And we are ready to put our plate together.
Add the mussels right around the rim. See, we have really nice colors, nice piece of fish.
We just need to add a little bit of powdered sugar.
And I will just put a little bit of reduction glaze over the top.
When you add a pesto like this onto a braised meat, the smells that just come up are just wonderful. Take it from me, we've got a good thing going here.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelinaros Taylor Show. On this Thursday afternoon, we've got Thomas Corbett Dillon, who's a political strategist and commentator, former aide to Boris Johnson. As a Brit now living in New York, he's got his own and very interesting perspectives on American and European politics and the nexus between them. So we'll talk a little bit about the Anglo-American relationship at the moment and then some specific issues relating to his past as a digital whiz kid in London. For instance, this is a possible ban of TikTok in the US, which he thinks is a very bad idea. Welcome to the show, Thomas.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Right. I just want to say there's a guy called Colby, Eldridge Colby, who gave an interview to Politico where he said that he really dissed Cameron. And we sort of all my life, you know, the Tories and the Republicans have been these two great friends and allies on either side of the Atlantic, the pillars of the post-war order sort of thing. And now they really seem to be splitting apart. Colby didn't spare the criticism, saying that Cameron, I think he was in the United States a week or two ago, he was leaning on the Americans to pass this aid package to Ukraine. And he was basically criticizing Cameron's meddling. And he said, "I find the gap between British conservatives and American conservatives must be at an all-time high, maybe going back to, I don't know, 1812. So in other words, the relationship between conservatives on either side of the Atlantic are the worst they've been for over 200 years. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's exactly correct. That seems to be the situation that I'm seeing here when I talk to Republicans about what's going on in the UK. I think most of them are surprised to hear that a Conservative government are in control of the United Kingdom, because some of the laws and some of the things that are happening in the UK do not sound like what a Conservative government will be pushing. And I think that comes down to the core of it, is that most of the British Conservative Party are no longer Conservative. They are more aligned with the Democrats. And we saw that shift really happen when David Cameron took power. He very quickly cozied up to Barack Obama and shifted. And you can actually see that most British conservatives are in this sort of weird center ground where they're kind of, you know, pretty aligned with the Democrats. There aren't, I would say there's a very limited amount of conservative members of parliament that would consider themselves of the MAGA, populist movement. I think there's very limited on that side of things.
Yeah, and I think that Trump has a personal grudge against the Tories because of the alleged meddling in American politics. You know, I mean, under both Cameron's and Theresa May's watch, you know, there was this the resignation of the head of GCHQ, which is the British equivalent of the NSA, to spend more time with his family after these allegations that Trump, the flagging up of Trump's alleged contacts with Russia was started off by the GCHQ. And then spread to America. And we know that the deep states on either side of the Atlantic support each other. And then there was this resignation of Kim Darroch, who's the British ambassador to Washington, also unprecedented or very rare, and he was bad-mouthing Trump. And then you've got this, so it's interesting. And also this idea that the British are getting American security for free, that they're talking down to the Americans, and yet they're spending far less on their defense. He's even praising David Lammy, who's the Labour's foreign policy candidate. I mean, that's unheard of. The Republicans praising Labour as being a better alternative than the Tories.
I wouldn't go too much into that. I think they probably don't know too much about David Lammy's deep opinions.
Exactly.
I think they probably read one headline and said, "Yeah, we like him."
Well, that's, I agree. I mean, I've seen David Lammy. I was sitting behind him on a bus once when he was education guy, secretary or minister. And I thought this is like a schoolboy, you know, he's kind of bobbing around, found it hard to focus on things, you know. I mean, I just saw his head basically. And I thought, when I thought he turns up on my radar 15 years later, I thought, him, foreign secretary? I mean, it's really going to go from out of the fire into the, out of the frying pan into the fire for British foreign policy, anyway. Yeah, so what can the Brits do to, or where can the, you as a transatlantic kind of guy, you're presumably interested in repairing this relationship, what can be done?
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Kim Darroch. I think that was one of the most embarrassing moments in British history. I mean, the fact is that everyone in Washington, D.C. knows that the intelligence community stopped sharing intelligence with the British Embassy because he was sleeping with a CNN journalist and was leaking evidence and information to her that would then appear on CNN. I mean, this is a really quite an embarrassing moment for the British in DC. And I think it also comes down to what in the UK we refer to sometimes as the blob, or here they call the deep state. It was this, you know, just sneering at President Trump and the fact that he won. You know, we know that the British embassy, there were reports of people crying in the embassy when Donald Trump was elected. You know, these people, you don't understand. They come to D.C. and they get so involved in the D.C. world that they basically think they're Americans and they think that this is their country, and they forget that they are there to represent British interests abroad. And what should have happened in those 4 years when we had the most pro-UK president that we have had in a long time, I think maybe even more pro than Reagan was. His mother was Scottish. This guy, he has business in England, in the UK. He loves the UK. And we refused to do a trade deal with him because we didn't want to upset the Democrats, because we were worried that, you know, in 4 years they'd come back in and they'd tear up the trade deal. This guy, he wrote a book on deals. And we refused to do a deal with him. We refused to engage in the administration. You know, I talked to my friends in Congress that work for Republican senators and congressmen. They never hear from the British Embassy. They're all too busy, you know, talking to the Democrats and engaging with the Democrats. And it's really embarrassing because the fact is that they should be representing the British people abroad. Mm. And the majority of British people, I think, actually quite like Donald Trump. They like what he stood for. They like what he did to the world. So the embassy in the US has real problems. And I think the Americans are very aware of that. And now what they're seeing, of course, is now everyone knows that President Trump is likely to win. They're coming crawling back. David Cameron's going to visit him in Mar-a-Lago and all of these things, you know. So, you know, the Americans are not stupid. They can see that this is what the Brits are trying to do. And I think we missed the opportunity 4 years ago.
Thomas, we're going to go into our news break, half-hour news break. We'll be back after that. Carrying on talking about British relations with the Democrats, if they are really that good. This is the Pelinier Ross Taylor Show on TNT, back after the news break.
Okay, everybody, listen up.
Big news.
Big news.
Real big news.
Here we go.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. US President Joe Biden's plan to resettle Palestinians from Gaza in the United States has lit a match among Republicans.
Your towns and villages will now be accepting people from Gaza.
Dozens of Western tanks and armored vehicles captured by Russian troops in Ukraine have gone on display in Moscow. And the UK has started detaining migrants in preparation for them to be removed from the country under the government's new immigration policy.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Pelinier Ross Taylor Show on TNT News Talk. We've got Thomas Corbett Dillon, who's a strategist and commentator and an Englishman in New York. He's a regular on Fox, CNN, BBC, Sky News, and many more. He's now living in New York, I just said, and focused on the US election cycle. And we were just talking about Anglo-US relations. And they're really rock bottom between the MAGA movement and the Tories. But the Democrats and the Tories, how's that going? Because let me just say, I mean, Biden, he's Irish, you know, and he didn't turn up for the coronation. And he vetoed Ben Wallace, who's the UK Defence Secretary, to become head of NATO. And then Wallace retired from politics shortly after that because he thought the British were too hawkish. So do you think that how do you think the relationship between the Democrats and the Tories, or the relationship between the Democrats and the British government, because they're not getting that free trade deal through, but is that the Brits' fault or the Americans' fault now? Well, you give us a little survey there of Democrats.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting because, you know, the Brits here and in the sort of, you know, polite society think that, you know, it's the right thing to be, you know, the Democrats are the you know, politically correct people, and we should be engaging with them and working with them. But the funniest thing about this is that the new Democrat Party despise the British because we're colonialists. We destroyed the world. You know, they all subscribe to this viewpoint where, you know, the British Empire was a bad thing. So they spent 4 years ignoring Trump because they thought, oh, the Democrats will come back and they'll like us and they're nice and we'll be friends with them. And then, of course, Biden comes in and the first thing he says is, you know, this Americanism of I'm Irish. And it's like, what, you know, 400 years ago, his grandfather lived in Ireland or something, but won't engage with the Brits. So now what you've got is they were holding out for the Democrats to, you know, engage with them and do a deal with them. The Democrats, the Biden administration could not care less about the British government. I don't think Rishi has even been to DC to meet with Biden. So, you know, it's quite embarrassing. And I do think, you know, if you're looking as a British person and the government that's representing you, we made a very fatal mistake in not doing a deal with Trump. And I think now what we're going to see is them desperately trying to do a deal with him.
Well, my feeling is that if Trump comes back, because he's got behind him this, I mean, basically, you know, don't forget that the idea of the special relationship is really a post-war thing, you know, Blair, Clinton, Thatcher, Reagan, Churchill, Roosevelt. But before that, you know, in the 19th century, America and Britain were each other's prime adversaries, at least Americans, because they had their colonial complex about having fought the Revolutionary War. And they almost came to blows several times in the 19th century. And we don't think about that because we're so marinated in this idea of the special relationship. And I think I've talked to a lot of people on my show, a lot of kind of America firsters, and they're busy leafing through their sort of colonial texts, you know, like we're fighting the blob, the empire, but it's not like an American empire. It's a global British American empire based in Washington and London. And they see themselves as, they even call themselves like Minutemen, you know, and they're really hearkening back to this idea of they see Washington as occupied territory and they're fighting for American patriotism against they sometimes talk about the Rothschilds. I don't know about all those details, but it's a global empire that's not necessarily American, but it's kind of British, American, you know, maybe Singaporean or something.
It's the sort of Davos crowd, you know, those sorts of elitists out there. But yeah, but I also think on the MAGA crowd as well now is there's this sort of belief that the UK is almost a puppet state. It almost has no place in their worldview because what does it bring? You know, other than when they want to do a strike on some country and they can't do it without us, they'll say, hey, can you do a strike in Yemen and, you know, do this so that we're not doing it on our own? And we say, oh, yeah, sure, we'll do that. The UK doesn't really stand up to the US on any of these things, on, you know, to the deep state, as you say. So they do. And, you know, and the thing with it is that there are so many issues here. And what we're going to see if Trump gets in, which is looking extremely likely, it is going to be a very isolationist regime. You know, they're going to put everything. It's MAGA. It's America first. It's going back to basics. And I think that is what the UK needs to be doing is putting Britain first. And unfortunately, you know, I was just in Hungary at the CPAC conference, which, you know, is a huge conference in the US for conservatives. The European one took place in Hungary. I was the only British person that attended. That just shows you the level. There were loads of Irishmen there. The Irish are really fighting back. But British conservatives, they're not right wing. They're not conservatives. They don't subscribe to these MAGA ideals. It's a real shame.
You know, when I look at the British press, I think, well, they're not relevant. I mean, they're slightly behind the times. They're not with it. They're not with the project. They're not with this. they don't understand the global trends of sort of, let's say, nationalism versus globalism and the things all we're talking about on this on these programs quite a lot. And, you know, and of course, well, I'm going to ask you a sort of slightly trick question because you're probably Brexit and I'm increasingly coming to see the emotionally coming to go on that side as well. But does should Britain what I mean, realistically, what should Britain do? Get back together with the Europeans on a, or where should Britain seek its alliances in the next 4 years?
Yeah, I think what is very likely to happen is that America is going to pull out of NATO. I think that tends to be what Trump is leaning towards. I think that would tie into his, you know, end of globalism. And I think in that scenario, then Europe should come back together, not rejoining the European Union. I think we're stronger to be apart from that. But we should reunite with our European brothers and help them on the continent and help Ireland as well. You know, I don't like this. All of a sudden now Rishi is coming out and saying that, you know, we don't want to do a deal with the Irish. We don't want to help them. It's like, you know, this is thousands of years of history with these countries, and they are much closer aligned to us than any of the other nations that we're willing to jump into. You know, if this was happening in Egypt, there was an uprising in Egypt, we'd be all over it. The British would be, they'd be sending the boats and everything. But, you know, there's big problems in Ireland and the people are fighting back. And it is coming to the fact where it is the elite and the globalists against the people. And it's a scary time that we're entering. So I think the UK is in an interesting position.
Okay, Thomas Corbett-Dylan, thank you very much. I'd love to have you on again to talk more about, we didn't manage TikTok this time, but maybe next time. Thank you very much.
It'll be banned by then. It'll be Dylan. Gone.
I beg your pardon?
It'll be gone next time I see you. Banned.
Oh, yes, exactly. Of course. Yeah. Okay. We'll have you on again, and we're going to go into our next guest after a very quick break, just a transition. Thank you very much. Yeah. Thanks.
As a combat wounded veteran, I know how hard it is to come home and build a meaningful life. When I was in Iraq, our vehicle was hit. A rocket-propelled grenade exploded right under my seat. Traumatic brain injury, a fractured pelvis, severe burns. They didn't think I was going to make it. I had to learn to walk again and live with the scars, both visible and invisible.
DAV helps veterans like LaToya get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
With DAV on my side, I was able to pursue my dreams. If my story can touch a heart, it can change a life. My victory is overcoming my wounds so I can help other veterans.
LaToya Lucas, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received 2 stents in my arteries, stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Discussing the politics of the new European populism, Pella Nuroth-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome to our second guest on this Thursday afternoon. We've got the excellent George Webb, who's an investigative journalist based in Washington, D.C., and he focuses on national security issues and the intersection between politics and Hollywood. He's written several best-selling books on Amazon.com, and you can find him on Rumble. Welcome to the show, George.
Pella, it's an honor to be here. Today I'm on the road in beautiful Cleveland, Ohio. It's the home of a Ukrainian billionaire, or at least he owns 5 of the buildings. I'm looking at the largest buildings in Cleveland, and you wouldn't think somebody who was on the State Department's watch list as sanctioned would own 5 of the biggest buildings in Cleveland. So that's just one of the fun things I get to do when I go on the road.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're just going to talk about you talk about this sort of intersection between politics and Hollywood, and this is a fantastic story about the mysterious death of Marilyn Monroe just after she'd been visited by RFK, 2 superstars, and RFK's son, of course, is running for politics. So we'll get to that. But one thing that captured my attention or imagination was this talk of the octopus Murders, which is apparently running on Netflix. So a lot of people will be able to go straight to Netflix after talking to us and see it for themselves, this four-part series. What are the Octopus Murders? Because one of our fellow members of our tribe, a journalist, was suicided. He said, I'm never going to commit suicide. And he dies apparently of suicide very shortly after investigating the octopus. So what is all about?
Sure. It's a story. The four-part series on Netflix is a story about Danny Castellaro, investigative journalist. It kind of gets intermixed and intertwined with Gary Webb. Gary Webb did the Iran-Contra story. So what's happened over time is the straight-ahead reporting that Danny Castellaro was doing about this software that was used basically as a promise software, which was used to do prosecutions. It was a prosecutor's tool, got co-opted by Mossad, Robert Maxwell, Henry Kissinger, his right-hand man, to put a back door so that they could quickly, by giving this to countries around the world rather than just having it in the United States, they could quickly come up with an army. You could quickly go to death row in 192 different countries and, hey, you know, that's the first person who's probably going to pick up arms against the existing regime. So that's what it was used for. In Netflix, you won't get there until the very, very end. And so what we like to do is just kind of cut to the chase and say, this is really all about Kissinger, Robert Maxwell, Bill Weld at Department of Justice stole the software so that Maxwell could sell it to all these countries. Richard Armitage sold it to our allies. And that's really the juice. That's really cutting to the chase.
Right. So and where what role does Robert Maxwell have? Because I used to work... my first job was at the European newspaper, which was one of his properties, and he just died. And I tried to talk about this subject as the young junior reporter, and nobody, very distinguished British journalist. The office was just opposite the Daily Mirror, which was apparently used to sponsor some Mossad operations, you know. And I'm part of a Facebook group with these guys from I knew from the European, very top names, and nobody still wants to talk about it. So obviously, very sensitive, and Maxwell died in 91, perhaps pushed off a boat by Mossad or something. So tell us a little bit about Mossad, father of Ghislaine, of course, lover of Epstein.
Well, he looted, as you know, the Times Corporation in England. He had also monopolized or bought up all of the scientific publishing, Springer and so forth, these very distinguished old English kind of hallmark companies in scientific publishing. So he wanted to corner the market in both of those. Why? Because they wanted to corner future war technologies. They had ambitions. Israel had an ambition with a nuclear program, as well as biological agents, as well as crypto, as well as hacking, hacking tools and so forth. So all of these things played into kind of their intellectual offensive, their espionage offensive. And he led the charge. Epstein is involved as well as a money man, as a funnel for various folks like Max Fischer in Detroit, here in Columbus, Les Wexner, etc. But that was the Mossad operation, and it was Bob Maxwell.
So, but in what way did Bob Maxwell lead the operation? And just to say, he was like Rupert Murdoch. He and Rupert Murdoch were equally famous in the 1980s. And we thought he was bombastic and narcissistic and all the rest of it, but we didn't think he was a Mossad guy. You know, that comes as a surprise, and you know, like a rewriting history, which I can totally agree with probably, but you know, he makes a very interesting character for those of us who remember those days.
Yeah, I remember him well, as I'm old. I'm 64, so I remember. Yeah, he very much is Mossad. He was ever since World War II was key at bringing out Russian scientists at later on after the fall of the Soviet Union in 91, but he was even involved in getting some of the scientific documents out from the Nazis, what they were doing in bioagents and so forth. So they were rinsing those papers with various folks. They had an operational center, Avi Braverman, in the Negev desert. That was kind of where their that's kind of where Mossad kind of made their mark. And it very much was the survival of Israel through force multipliers like nuclear, like hacking tools, et cetera.
So Who killed this guy Castellero, and what was the proximate cause of that? As I said, it reminded me of the Gary Webb thing. Gary Webb was this San Jose Mercury guy who was investigating, was it CIA drug smuggling or funneling of drugs to poor Black Americans in LA? And so it became a kind of racial scandal on top of everything else. And going via Arkansas, under Clinton's governorship. And then he was suicided as well. But Casolaro died. So who did it and who had a motive to do it? Because, you know, it's the sort of thing we associate with authoritarian societies, you know?
Right. This is where the Casolaro story, this is where the Octopus Murders kind of blends in and bleeds in to the Dark Alliance that Gary Webb wrote about Iran-Contra. That's the real story. The real software was Systematics, run by Jackson Stevens. Systematics wrote the software for, as you mentioned, Arkansas Development Finance Authority. That's where Bill Clinton was giving out million-dollar loans like candy. That's where they were getting $50,000 bags full of money on the steps of the Rose Law Firm as kickback with Vince Foster and Hillary Clinton. That's really Iran-Contra. And Dick Armitage, who was the right-hand man of Henry Kissinger, really wanted to mix these two stories together. They're chalk and cheese. They should not be mixed together. The software, the promise software, was very specific. It was to raise armies. And that's why Bob Maxwell sold it to all of the, with the back door, sold it to all of the neighbors of Israel. And then Richard Armitage sold it to all of our allies, all the Five Eyes, like England and New Zealand, etc.
And it was a kind of recruitment tool, as you said.
Yes. The quickest way to get an army that's vicious and wants to kill is to go to death row and say, do you want to stay here and die, or do you want to become part of the partisan army?
Mm. But I mean, just how would you need software for that? Because can't you just go to death row and talk to people? I mean,
well, if you control the country, yeah, sure. But if you don't control the country, because they probably don't want to give up the death row people, let's say you're trying to overthrow Jordan, just one of the companies he sold it to, they don't want to tell you who's on their death row because they don't want you to recruit. But if you have a back door, you can find out who those people are. You can bribe the jailer. You can get those people out. You can create a resistance movement. And that's what Robert Maxwell did. They flipped all the countries around Israel to get friendly. They didn't flip Assad with Syria, but Abdullah in Jordan certainly is friendly. Sadat was certainly friendly in Egypt versus, you know, before with Nasser. So it worked. The overthrows around Israel, for the most part, worked, with the exception of Syria.
Well, that's so interesting, because, I mean, one of the things that the mainstream media never talk about, and many of us who study these things do know, is the way to which the US and UK have weaponized the radicals and the bad guys in the Middle East to fight their own secular regimes, right? So it began with Afghanistan and then moved to Syria, where they sponsored Al-Qaeda type movements, or the Free Syrian Army, or even ISIS, and going around sort of destroying these countries so that Israel would have fewer enemies, you know, basically neutralizing everyone. And so was Promise part of that then?
Yes, it was part of the greater Israel type thing that you're saying, which is topple and then put somebody in who is more to your liking. Whether or not they outwardly appear, for instance, Ahmadinejad, in after the overthrow of the Shah, was saying death to Israel, death to America. But at the same time, he was selling oil to Mark Rich, who was another Mossad operative, a very close associate of Bob Maxwell.
Right. I'm not that expert on Epstein, but Epstein, of course, knew Maxwell, both Maxwell Pear and Maxwell, the daughter, Ghislaine. And what did Maxwell Sr. pass on to Epstein in terms of Mossad know-how or whatever, contacts? What role? I've never been quite clear what Epstein actually did. It's all alluded to, but it's never really spelled out.
Well, he really got into bioagents. You know, he was in Columbus with Les Wexner. He was at the Defense Supply Center, the DSC, where we've gone in our story. That's where Battelle Labs is. They manage all the bioagents, and they also manage the Fort Detrick and so forth. Peter Strzok, Lisa Page are from that group. He got into a lot of the CRISPR companies. He invested with Bill Gates in a lot of the CRISPR stuff. And that really became the force multiplier, where Maxwell was really more about the espionage and getting the uranium and using conventional arms. Epstein was really kind of the graduate level. They wanted to kind of upscale him. I mean, Maxwell certainly wanted Epstein to be the protege, but they also wanted a smarter protege. And Epstein was very involved in Africa with HIV and other places to test bioagents and so forth.
And I might sound like an ingenue asking this question, but did Epstein and Ghislaine, they ran this sex ring with underage girls to blackmail a large number of politicians?
Yes, but I think the part that doesn't get told is there was far more scientists that were compromised, both in the UK and at Epstein's Island and at the Stone Fortress in New York and in West Palm Beach. I've been to all these places many times. And the Harvard, Yale, Columbia, you know, all the marquee names that you would think of, Johns Hopkins, MIT, these are the places where they wanted to get someone who was compromised that could feed them the intellectual property.
Wow. Okay. And that story hasn't been told so much. Are there reasons? I mean, I'm obsessed with this idea of news management, that we only get very curated version of the news, you know, and some stories are not told. Why do you think we haven't heard? I mean, we've heard so much about Prince Andrew, but we haven't heard so much about these scientists that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, Stephen Hawking was a regular guest there. Followed this doctor.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Dr. God. Eric Braben. He was the longevity wonderkin. And Dr. Eric Braben with Duchess Fergie had a PATH Institute for longevity and so forth. So the reason why they've kind of just gone to the sex angle here is that's the part of the intelligence that they want to cover up. They don't want that part to become, it's all Andy with the girl, Virginia Roberts. You know, it's not him being on the British Virgin Islands, which literally you can almost walk across the space between the British Virgin Islands and the U.S. Virgin Islands. It's a perfect place to do espionage and exfiltration of secrets.
George, we're just going to pivot to this subject, which is irresistible to me. We'll maybe have you on again and talk about the other subjects. But Starlet's link to Kennedy. What's that story? Because who was Marilyn Monroe's principal? Are you saying she's some kind of agent or something? Or what is it? What is that?
Well, I think they the FBI tried to make her, sheep dip her as a communist spy. There's talk of that she went to Russia. Her name was Masha, potentially, or Comrade Monroe. It's all in my Substack, georgewebb.substack.com. I'm just putting it out there. But the idea is to compromise the Kennedys, to smear them so that Kennedy has to resign. Robert Kennedy dies in the house of Marilyn Monroe. He's there at 10:30 at night when she dies. So that's right. That's odd, because he's the last person in bed with Marilyn Monroe before he dies. Now, he was secreted away on a helicopter, etc. And not a lot of people know the story, but if you get into it, you'll see that the Marilyn Monroe had a long relationship with Jack Kennedy before Robert Kennedy, going back all the way to at least 1954. And they were continually using her as a lure to smear the Kennedys so that the Johnson would become president and all the defense contractors in Texas would get all the largesse from the DOD. So this is it's a long history, and I document it all. And it's interesting because they choose Indio, which is Palm Springs, California, first with Frank Sinatra, trying to get him to use this Western White House in Palm Springs, then Bing Crosby's residence. Well, the book that Danny Casolaro was going to write when he was murdered, and the notes that were found in his left shoe, the title of the book was Indio. So it's a hotbed. It's a hotbed of gangsters meeting the CIA for overthrowing and compromising political leaders.
Right. So Marilyn Monroe was to be painted. She wasn't a communist, but she was to be painted as a communist so that the CIA could say, look, our presidents are sleeping with communist agents. Get rid of them. And we've got to have a president who's not compromised like Lyndon Baines Johnson. Well, that's extremely interesting. And I didn't know. I presume you mean that she died when RFK was there, because RFK, of course, famously died in a California kitchen, didn't he, when he was assassinated? Yes. Okay, George, I don't think we've got time to launch on any
Go ahead.
Carry on. It's okay, George. Carry on.
Well, I was just going to say, Sharon Tate is another Marilyn Monroe lure that had dinner with Roman Polanski with Bobby Kennedy right before he was killed in 1968. So, yes, the idea is if once I make contact with somebody who has Soviet leanings, now I can wiretap. That's the most important thing, is now I can wiretap all the conversations and maybe I'll find something there to compromise the Kennedys.
Excellent. That's really interesting. So was there a wiretap on their conversations, Marilyn Monroe's and the Kennedys? We've got all those.
Yes. 625 Beach Road, Peter Lawford's house where they had liaisons, was wiretapped, four different bugs. And also her house in Brentwood, Marilyn Monroe's house in Brentwood, had four bugs as well. The Indio locations in Palm Spring were also wiretapped. Mm.
Okay. George Webb, you can read his Substack for this 5 or 6 part series. It sounds excellent. I'd look at it this afternoon, and really, really interesting. Two of the three iconic figures of the 20th century, all involved in unfortunate manipulations by the CIA. Thank you very much, George. Love to have you on again. Have a good day in Ohio. Thanks. This is the Pelanero Television on TNT News Talk. Great. Thank you very much.